Good? All right. Bye. I'm Chris. I'm an alcoholic.
Chris!
First of all, I want to welcome the newcomers. I remember when I came in, you should probably be feeling very over-caffeinated and underappreciated, just like I was. And I had a lot of wants and needs, and I had a lot of things that I thought I needed and wanted. If that makes sense, I said that twice. There was just a lot of things swimming around in my head because I was raised with these beliefs and these instincts, you know? I like to go fast. I like to burn rubber. I like violence, but I hate confrontation. I like work, but I hate jobs, you know? And in the big book, it talks about, well, in the 12 and 12, technically, it talks about our instincts and how they're awry, right? So in the fourth step, you go in there, and it talks about how ever since the dawn of time, man has had these instincts for self-preservation, survival, and lighting fires, and, you know, stuff like that. But it talks about how an alcoholic like me, and probably like most of you, there's this anomaly, this thing that a lot of normal people that don't understand us can't understand. And for me, it manifests. So, like, say you have a friend and he's like, I just got a girlfriend, right? A normal person would be like, oh, that's great, congratulations. And I would be like, man, screw you, where's my girlfriend? You know? why isn't this happening to me? I'm not going to be happy for you. It's all about me, you know? And he's like, dude, I just broke up with my girlfriend. You know? Because that's how my instincts are. I like to laugh at your pain, and I like to suffer on your success. Because it's all about me. This is a disease of self-obsession. And it's a disease that naturally parts me from you. You know, and because I think human beings are naturally, we're supposed to be around each other. We're supposed to huddle together for warmth. You know, we hunt, we gather, we do all this stuff, but when it comes to my disease, it's a complete opposite, you know? And I don't know how to talk to you. I don't know how to be socially acceptable. I don't know how to function. And I used to like to get drunk on trains. You know, my dad wasn't really around. And when he was around, it was very confusing because I idolized him because I thought he was the kind of man that I wanted to be, right? He used to blow stuff up for a living. He used to, you know, he was just that guy that knew everything about everything. He had a long time in the program, and he went out when I got sober, but he had a long time. And I remember every time I would meet, like, he introduced me to metal, you know, and guns, and, like, he was just this badass dude. But my mom couldn't stand him, you know? And I remember when I was around this man, all I would ever... I discovered this feeling that I later identified in my fourth step, in my sixth and seventh, that all I wanted to do was please this guy. And in order to do that, I kept my mouth shut because I was so afraid of saying the wrong thing that he would go away again, you know? And it came to the point to where I changed myself. I still do this. I changed myself so much in order to compensate for something of what I think you think I need to be. You know, and this is all manifested through just the ism. You know, he doesn't make me an alcoholic. My upbringing didn't make me an alcoholic. You know, smoking crystal meth didn't make me an alcoholic. Drinking Jack Daniels didn't make me an alcoholic. You know, the outside things, the material stuff, and the stuff that I thought made me messed up, that's not the thing that made me come to this program. It's like my thinking got me here, but your thinking kept me here. You know, and when it comes down to it, and when I boil it down, I get to realize that when I'm left with myself and I have no solution, I'm very uncomfortable. You know, and I felt that ever since I was a kid very consistently. You know, and you guys taught me when I came in here that consistency doesn't need to be a negative thing. It can be something positive. You know, and that started out by somebody remembering my name every time I came to a meeting. You know, you guys wanted to start having me mop your floors, you know? And what happened was, instead of having to go to these ANA meetings, I started to want to come back because you guys were attractive to me. And, excuse me. I was born to a single mom and she raised me, right? And she would have these guys come in and out of our lives. Some of them weren't very nice. Some of them tried, you know? And, so from a very young age, I learned how to be a chameleon. You know, I'm sure there's some chameleons in this room. I can't even see a few of you, you know? it's like when we walk into a room together, we can identify, you know, we don't need to talk a lot of the times. It's like, yeah, you belong here. Or we see the mannerisms or we get it because we're like a people that mix that normally wouldn't. Which also comes out of our literature. We're a group of people that normally wouldn't mix. A lot of us are sitting in this room, and if we were out there, we wouldn't be able to stand each other, you know? But when I came into this room, I had all these judgments, and I had all these preconceived notions of what I thought Alcoholics Anonymous would be, you know? Because I was raised in this program from a very early age, because there's a lot of people in my family who are directly affected or indirectly affected by this disease. You know, my grandpa's got 38 years sober. My mom's been in Al-Anon since a long time. And she tells me that. And my dad, obviously, is an alcoholic. And you know, my aunt, who goes to the same home group I do, she's in the program. And it's just a trip, man. You know, if you've grown up around alcoholics, you know. And it's really hard for me to measure myself when there's not a lot of people around me that understands my disease. You know, so from a very early age, I mean, I calculated it. I counted it one day. I lived up until I was 18 and got sober. I lived in about 14 different places and went to, I think, about 12 or 13 different schools. And the funny part is when I came in here, I had a resentment against my mom because I thought she was out to get me and she damaged me as a kid, when in reality, she did the best she could with what she had, you know? And at any point, because we talk a lot, we still talk like at least twice, three times a week because we have that relationship. And it's like, you know, every decision I've ever made has been the best decision that I've ever tried to make in that moment with what I had, you know? And to have somebody say that to you and to actually believe it, that's just a pure result of working the program. You know, I'm not saying I work a perfect program, but I've gotten to the point where I've had the ability to be able to look at the things that I did that I wasn't able to do before. You know, I can treat you differently than I used to treat people before I got in here. You know, I don't resort to sizing you up or hitting you, or I'm not a tough guy, but it's like if you get in my way, you know, I can't help it. You know what I mean? And if you can relate to that, you know, you're welcome here. And I don't know, there's not a lot of stuff that I plan to say up here. And it's funny because, like, my buddy, Oscar, thank you for sharing, by the way, and thank you for asking me. I tell him a lot of stuff I have no business telling anybody. But he tells me a lot of stuff I'm more than happy to share with the group. I'm just kidding. I love you, dude. But my life has been a series of just unfortunate events, or, oh man, I was at the wrong place at the wrong time, or no, officer, I wasn't. You know, this is my car. And it's funny because it's like all these excuses and all the things that I came up with, and, you know, because I never even really took a legal drink. I got sober young. But I would get pulled over. I would crack. Like, I remember my first car was this. It's, get ready because it's badass. It was this Saturn sports coupe. Thing was cool, man. And it was stick shift. And I remember I had this thing, and, like, I remember Fast and the Furious came out. And I tried to be like that in that thing. And I took a corner way too hard, and I was trying to drift, and I rolled it up an ice plant hill. And I had my buddy in the car. And it's funny because my first thought in my head is, how am I going to get my drugs now? Not, oh, I hope everyone's okay. I hope my friend's okay. You know, because normal people are basically geared towards others. And all I was thinking about was, how am I going to get out of this? How am I going to roll this thing down the hill? There's all these crazy fluids coming out of this car. I managed to get it down the hill and I just ran, you know, even though they knew whose it was. And, but that's, I was very confused. I didn't know. And, you know, fast forward a little bit to when I got sober. I mean, I can qualify and I can keep going, but I've been sober a little while and I like to talk about the program. You know, I remember, like, I got sober in this place called New Life House in Torrance. And back then, there wasn't a lot of, like, put rocks on your back and yoga and rehabs like that. You know, there's a lot of that today, which is fine. But I think that's, for me, that's like a $90,000 big book. But I went to this place, and there was a bunch of guys in there, and they were running around, and they were really happy, and you know, going back to the instincts thing, it's like my first thought was, how do I get out of here? What do I do in order to get out of this place? Because I was so uncomfortable, right? And it gets to a point to where it talks about in the big book is like, when is enough enough? I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. I'm tired of spending all this energy on trying to be somebody I'm not. I'm tired of being this guy that's very, I'm not dependable. Every job I ever had, I got fired from. You know, I remember I worked at this job, I think it was Boston Market, and I was just graduated high school somehow. I think I just blacked out and came to with a diploma in my hand. It was adult school, because I got kicked out of two high schools before that. And I'm working at this place, and I show up drunk. And my, this girl that I was, a girlfriend or whatever, she got me the job. And I just remember, I think I lasted about a week, and then I showed up drunk. And then he's like, get out of here. And I'm screaming at the customers and at the guy. And the insanity that ensues in my brain tells me to show up for work the next day. So I took my apron, I threw it in his face, I ran out of the store, and I just kind of ran down the street. And then so I show up to work the next day like nothing happened. And I'm like, hey, I need a new apron. And the guy, the boss, came to me and he just looked at me. And if you're new and you're here, I think you know what look I'm talking about. Or if you're used, new or used, you know the look, right? That look of just confusion, hopelessness, pity, and how do you exist? You know? And he just stared at me and he's like, dude, get out of here. I'm going to call the cops. But that thinking for me was perfectly normal because in my head, all I'm thinking about is how can I get mine? You know? And I think I showed up on time too. You know? Because I had this sense of entitlement and I had this sense of, don't you know who I think I am? You know, I got to go back and make amends to that place. It was a trip, man. I called the corporate office. I think I stole like 30 or 40 bucks out of the cash register, like blatantly. And I called the corporate office and they're like, I'm like, yeah, about, I think it was like 10, 15 years later. I'm like, yeah, I worked at the Boston Market and in Carlsbad and I stole money out of the cash register and I just want to see what I can do to make it right. Can I write you a check or whatever? And they're like, who is this? Like, what are you talking about, man? It's like they were very confused because like they no one's ever done that, right? And they're just like, no, it's okay. I'm like, well, I need to make amends because I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was just one of the most awkward things I think I've ever done. But the gratitude that I felt afterwards, you know, and then what I ended up doing was because my mom lives down there, I went into that Boston Market and I was like, you know, I just kind of shot it back and forth with the manager and he was a different guy. And I'm like, yeah, I just put, I think, 30 bucks in the tip jar, you know, and it just felt so good. You know, it feels good to do the opposite of what my instincts tell me to do, you know, And so I guess to go back to when I got sober, I was in this house and there was all these guys running around and they looked so happy. And I didn't really understand that because I just felt so pitiful and demoralized. You know, they talk about the incomprehensible demoralization and how pitiful that this disease makes me feel as a result. And it just comes to a point to where I'm sitting there and I'm like, I'm sitting there and there's this guy next to me and his name is Mark. And Mark's parents told him that they were going to Disneyland and he packed his bags and then he took them to rehab. You know, so I'm sitting next to this guy who's just as confused and traumatized as I am because I thought I was going to go do something else too. And here we are. So we're sitting there and this is how the program worked for me and this is how my perception shifted, because in the back of the book it talks about a spiritual experience. You know, and a spiritual experience was described as a shift in perception, and more religious members call it a God consciousness, right? Which is kind of scary if you're new, because like talking about God and talking about religion and talking about all this stuff, for me it made me feel very uncomfortable because I experienced church. I used to go to youth group and I used to start singing Slayer right in the middle of the freaking hymns, you know. I wore a Godsmack t-shirt. And they didn't like that. I thought it was really cool. So I'm in this place and like this place was so cool, man. It was like this super ghetto house on Artesia Boulevard and it had this black white checkered floor and there's pictures like those tin pictures of Sinatra and Marilyn Monroe and there's this jukebox that barely worked. You had to hit it a certain way. And I grew to love that place because it was so imperfect, but it was perfect for me, you know? And so it was just a house full of dudes. And the way we did it was like, we would have these groups and we would sit around and we would scream at each other for like 8 hours. And we'd all smoke cigarettes in the room. And the guy with the most time would get an ashtray and the guy with the least amount of time would get the ashtray and they would just keep rotating. You know, so we'd have like these 7-8 hour groups until like 4 or 5 in the morning. And the purpose with that was that, you know, you either do the work or you leave because they didn't keep you in there. And it was very scary for me because like I told you, I hated confrontation. I thought I was this tough guy, but in reality, I was just this scared kid. You know, I was very scared of getting to know you and I was very scared that I would say the wrong thing because I didn't want you to leave. You know, I would try to make friends every time I moved and every new school I went to. I was bullied a lot. You know, I'd have to fend for myself because most of the friends that I did make had two parents at the house and they had brothers and sisters or they were the popular kids, you know. So I was able to start bobbing and weaving in different crowds. You know, I'd be the skate surf guy and I'd play hacky sack and then I would run track and field and play with yo-yos and play the Game Boy. And like I was just all these different guys. You know, for those of you who are younger, Game Boy is like this little game thing. And but that's what I felt I had to do because I was just so uncomfortable not knowing who I was. And so as time progressed in this house, I think I had like 2 or 3 months. I would stay up a lot and I was detoxing and sweating and my face looked like a meat lover's pizza. And I was just picking myself and, you know, we'd scrub the house with toothbrushes and you know, and then there was this one night where this kid came up to my bunk and there was like 4 guys in room, per room or 5 guys per room in bunk beds. And for some reason, he tapped me on the shoulder and he's like, "Hey, man," this guy's name was Garrett. And Garrett came up to me and he's like, "I'm about to leave. And you can come with me, you can, or whatever." I mean, 2 white dudes rolling down Artesia Boulevard at 3 a.m. is not a good idea, especially young kids, you know. And so I was, for some reason, something happened, you know. And when it talks about in the big book, it's like something changed, you know, something changed. And something in me changed for a second was either, okay, yeah, I'll go with you, or, you know, screw you, man, I don't care, no. But something made me get out of that bed. And for the first time in my life, I realized what that spiritual experience means. And for me, it manifested in shutting up and listening. And this program taught me a lot of different things about myself, one of them being how simple it is to stay sober. It's very simple. And it may not be easy. It's like a lot of people say, it's like years are easy. It's the days that are hard. You know, so I got out of bed and I remember I just like, let's just go outside. And we went outside and this yard had these like 50s booth seatings with all the torn fart marks on them. And, you know, and it's like, it's impossible to clean this house. And we tried, you know, we would stay up for 2 or 3 days straight and they make us scrub the house sometimes. And then that's when like a whole bunch, tens or twelves of people would leave because they couldn't handle it, you know. And then for some reason I stayed. I think I was just too scared to leave because I was too scared to know what it was like to go out and drink again. You know, because I would drink and I would throw up blood and then I would keep drinking and I would rationalize the alcohol, would sanitize my throat and clean it so that I could keep drinking. And then I would keep throwing up blood. And then top that with meth and weed and all the other fun, wonderful marching powders out there. That never worked. You know, so I sit out there with this kid, and before I knew it, I'm just sitting there quietly, and I'm like, what's wrong? You know, and it's really the simplest questions that really make me think. You know, has anyone ever asked you what's wrong, or how are you, or what do you want? You know, how is your day? How is your day? And then I come up with a bunch of lies in order to make myself look cool or get you away from me. Because that's my defense mechanism, right? So I'm just like, what's going on, man? Why do you want to leave? And then before I know it, he proceeds to tell me like his whole life story, right? And it's very uncomfortable. Because anyone that tries to open up with me makes me very uncomfortable. It makes me shut down. And it just makes me want to hit you, you know? I don't know why. You know, maybe because I was abandoned as a kid. Maybe because my mom used to search for the closest thing to throw things at me with, you know? I love my mom. And I got hit with a lot of different things. And or maybe it's because I just felt so uncomfortable with being alone that anyone who tried to come into my life just made me want to, you know, I was this guy. I was like, get away, but come closer. It's very confusing. And so the sun started coming up, and before I knew it, this guy was still sitting there. We were both crying like little girls, and I got to know this guy a little more. You know, and it was really fascinating because we went through like, I don't know, 2 or 3 packs of cigarettes, a pot of coffee, and we ended up like cry laughing, you know, and it was just really cool because I started to know this guy a little more, and most of it was just me exerting no energy and just being a spot to where this guy can listen. You know what I'm saying? Any of you ever done that? You know? And the next night, I was freaking out, and he sat with me, and he's like, what's going on? And I'm like, I don't know, you know, because all of our emotions come at once, and I for me, I didn't really know how to deal with them or what to do, so obviously, I would just talk a bunch of nonsense until it started to make sense to me, you know, and what made sense to me in that moment was that I have a dude that opened himself up to me, so I figure I owe him, you know, maybe I should start opening it up to this dude. And that for me is the attraction. It's just having a spot that you can go to bounce stuff off of. Have I cussed yet? Wow. That's amazing. I'm not going to remember this. I'm blacked out right now. So over time, we started to do our chores together. You know? Over time, we started to... I never really had that male camaraderie. So we started to wrestle, we started to mess around, we started to have fun, we'd go to meetings together. And then other dudes started to join our little clique, right? And before you knew it, all the guys in the house, it's not because of me, I'm just saying, like I learned from you guys that in order to establish relationships, in order to be honest, and in order to have friendships and to love, I have to do that for myself. And I have to present that in a way to be attractive to another person. And it started to work. And it freaked me out because I was doing things and I was just like, oh God, now I'm a friend. That requires responsibility and that requires something that I need to do. I got to check in with this guy. I got to ask him out, you know. And it was scary. And the only way I was able to grow in the program is to be uncomfortable. Even now. This last couple years have been very uncomfortable for me. And I have some time sober and I've been around here a little while. You know, I started plugging into Pacific Group. I started to make new friends. Like, Oscar's a really good friend of mine. And it's still to this day. I mean, these are my instincts. My instincts is to go into the mountains, dig a hole, and then just stay there. You know what I mean? It's just, I don't know. I don't know why. That's just how my disease is. And so I stayed sober in this place for a while, and they would take us to meetings. And we didn't have, like, the vans or anything. It's like a lot of people who graduated the place or people from outside meetings would take us to meetings. And that's what I was talking about before, where I would consistently start to go to these meetings. People would start to remember my name, and people would start to want me to touch their coffee cups or wash out the ashtrays or show up and mop their floor. You know, anyone who's ever mopped the floor at a meeting knows that no matter what, the floor is going to stay dirty. Because they always use these crappy mops, and the water is always dirty. And every time you do 4 sweeps, the water gets black. But that's part of the magic. Because hopefully next week it'll be clean, right? I keep kicking this thing. You know, it was Spartan kicked this podium over. I started to show up more. Well, I had to. But I started to show up every week. And then people were like, hey, Chris, good to see you. You know? And I remember my first commitment was sweeping and mopping the floors at the Hermosa Beach Alano Club. And I went to the Hermosa Beach Men's Stag, and there was a lot of guys with a lot of time there, and it was very intimidating because I was never really able to get close to men because all the men that were in my life were incapable of being close with themselves, and which is fine. I mean, that's just, like I said, that's the way I was raised. It's circumstantial. And these men taught me how to be a man, essentially. They taught me how to be consistent. They taught me how to treat women. They taught me that you got to show up every week early to your meeting. You got to do your commitment. You got to just speak when you're spoken to. Don't share about nonsense. Share about what's going on or share about the step. You know, we don't want to hear anything because we've heard it all. You know, and I didn't share for a long time because no one really wanted to hear what I had to say because I didn't have much to say at all. Because I was still in that survival mode where I still had to try to impress you or tell you, yeah, I used to handle duffel bags full of drugs. I never did that. But I would try to say all this stuff in order to make you like me. But I realized it's like I don't really know anything or enough about myself in order to make that happen. And you guys taught me how to do that. Through showing up for other people, I was able to start showing up for a job. The first job that I ever had was, I still can't pronounce it, and I'm not going to, but it was at this fancy French Starbucks place in Manhattan Beach, and I took 3 buses to get there. I had 10 months sober. This was awesome. And I got that job off in an amends, right? So I go in there, and we had this thing called the Cannoli Shack, and it was a big shed full of clothes that people left there. So our job was to go dig through, find a suit that fit, so that we can go look for jobs. And they stunk. Yeah. I'll never forget this, man. This is so cool. So me and this guy, who was around my time, it was our time to go look for jobs. His name was Anthony. And we're both wearing these dumb and dumber suits that didn't fit. We looked ridiculous. And our job was to go around and look for jobs. That was our job. So that's what we did. And I go into this place. He ends up getting the job right across the street at this ice cream place. We had no business being in this city. If you've ever been to Manhattan Beach, it's ridiculous. And so I go into this place, and this guy, his name's Steve, he's the manager of this place. And for some reason, I walk in there, that guy just saw right through me. Every time I ever tried to get a job, even in sobriety, we're very good at interviews, right? I was laid off due to change in management. The business is no longer a business. Cold Stone. I got fired from there. And can you explain your gap in employment? Well, I went to Italy for a while with my family I don't even remember what I said. It doesn't matter. But that's the thing, is like, I come up with excuses. I come up with things so that you could feel better about hiring my stupid ass, right? Because I'm going to be the guy that shows up every day that makes, I just want to make money so I can get high and drunk, right? And so I'm in this place, I have the same resume that I've given out 10 times, and I'm just sitting there and I feel defeated because I'm starting to get to know myself enough, and I'm starting to get to gain this thing called self-esteem. You know, I'm doing esteemable acts in order to make me feel better about myself. And I give them the resume, I do the interview, and I walk out of the store, and I just kind of sit on the curb. Me and Anthony are sitting on the curb. It's just like Dumb and Dumber. Like, felt like Lloyd Christmas. I'm like, well, we got no food, we got no rent, pets' heads are falling off. It's funny. I thought it was funny. Go away. Fight me. But it was weird because I had this other realization, and spiritual experiences for me come in all different shapes and sizes, right? It can be something as little as, hey, shut your mouth and just listen to this dude and maybe he won't leave. Or, hey, maybe you should go back in there and be honest and see what happens. Or maybe taking the 3 buses to work all day, maybe it'll help you somehow. And so he's like, yeah, dude, just go back in there and tell him the truth. And that never crossed my mind. Isn't that crazy? It's like the simplest concepts of, hey, maybe being honest will help. And I got up and I adjusted my extra, extra, extra large suit jacket and from 1979. And I go back in there and he's just standing there in the doorway. And I'm just like, and I was scared, you know. And that's the first time I've ever felt fear from something like that, because that's scary. You know, being honest is scary and it's uncomfortable. And I'm like, can we sit down for a minute? I need to talk to you. He's like, sure. Like, he knew it was coming. And I just talked to him for a minute. I'm like, listen, I'm in a rehab or a recovery house. I've been there for 10 months and it's time for me to go out and get a job. And I would like nothing more than to be able to show up for you and to be able to come to work and start making money so I can pay my rent, you know, because we had to start paying rent at a certain time. And I'm like, I want to make amends because, you know, I lied to you on my application. And I was just scared. Literally, I was just scared because I didn't know what you would think of me if I told you the truth. And it was really cool because he just sat there for a minute. He took a deep breath and he's like, well, this is the first time that's ever happened. You start training on Monday, and I was like, whoa, you know? And in the book, it talks about results. I wouldn't stay sober. I wouldn't be here if I didn't get results, man. This is a selfish program. I'm just going to say it. In order for me to stay sober, I need to do stuff like this. You know, and in order for you to stay sober, you need to listen to me. Just kidding. I'm kidding. I'm joking. But seriously, I don't know. You know, so I started that job, and it sucked because it was just people, just these snivelly people that didn't work the steps like I did. You know, they didn't have a program like mine. They didn't have to take 3 buses to work. You know, and I started to develop opinions as newcomers do. You know, we get our opinions back. And things start to upset me, and it was interesting, man. But I worked at that job, I think, for like a year, year and a half. And then I got another job. You know, I worked at Sears, being a sign guy, you know. So I graduated from riding 3 buses to work to riding my bike 10 miles to work. And it was dope. I'm not going to lie, it was awesome. I hated it first because it'd be 4 in the morning. I had to be there by, I think, 5. And I would post these signs up around the store, you know? And it's interesting because this program you guys taught me, as a result of showing up and as a result of asking somebody how their day is and as a result of honestly making an honest amends and being able to be around people and just, I don't need to be the center of attention and tell you how cool I am or what I need. I can just sit there in a conversation and just shut up and be a part of the conversation. You know? I learned how to be consistent, like I said before. And they started giving me a raise at Sears you know? And I started to play around with the dude. We play football, like half an hour before work. We just throw the football around in the store. Like we developed these things, you know? And I never had these things. I never had these things with anyone because I didn't know what it was like to function as a sober and to live up to the expectations of normal society, man. You know? And I still have a problem with it sometimes because my self-will comes back. But for the most part, I mean, my bills are paid. And I graduated from that job and I smoked like 2 packs of Marlboro Reds a day at that time. And they gave me a carton of Marlboro Reds and a bottle of cheap cologne because I would always go in there and I'd just do a little spray of the cheap Stetson cologne because I thought it smelled good. I don't know, it just made me feel better. It was like my little ritual that I did. You know, and they gave me that and they actually gave me like a goodbye party. You know, because as a result of this, of what you guys as a collective taught me, you guys made me able to be able to function. You guys made people that don't understand this not have to be worried about it. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten a call on my Nokia when I was younger. Where are you? When are you going to be home? What are you doing? Why are the cops at my house? Why is the car in half? I gotta tell you, I also had a Chevy Astro van, and if you're getting loaded, that's a great car to have. It's really good for beer runs because the back opens. Anyways, and you know, for me today, oh my God, 9:15. For me today, like. What I struggle with, I think, is kind of sometimes the same things, man. Because just because I'm sober doesn't mean everything's great. And I like to try to be realistic with people that I sponsor, people that ask me how I'm doing. I don't just be like, fine, I'm good, everything's great, how are you? You know, I don't try to divert the conversation back on you or try, you know, because I was very manipulative before as well. And I would try to divert back on you so you don't have to look at me. And you know, if you ask me how I feel, I'll tell you. And if I ask you how you feel, I'll listen. You know, but lately it's been a struggle for me because I'm going through a lot of changes. And I think for alcoholics, the most uncomfortable thing is change. You know, about a year and a half ago, I was working in, like, because I'm a motorcycle mechanic. And I'm also other things too, because we're the jack of all trades, aren't we? So I'm working in this shop and the rag slips and cuts half my thumb off, right? And if anyone has ever lost an appendage, it's not as bad as you think. It's not like in the movies where they scream and cry and all that stuff. I was like, oh wow. And the drugs are really good in the hospital. And I had never experienced that until couple years ago. But that was one of the craziest things that ever happened to me, because in that moment the uncomfortability was so overwhelming that all I had was God, you know. And if you're new, and like I said before, if that word makes you uncomfortable, you're gonna have to deal with it, you know. Because for me, when I came in here, I had all these preconceived notions of what I thought a higher power was. And one of the resistances that I had was the fact that I needed to be different from you. And so you guys would talk about God or a power greater than yourself, which is fine too. But for me, I stopped wanting to be different, so I would just call it God. You know, it's one syllable. You can grunt it when you get up in the morning. And everyone knows what that means. You know, because I'm lazy. And so I dealt with that, right? So I'm in this lawsuit. Cool. And I'm in this lawsuit with this guy. And who gave me the opportunity to work at that place, you know? So obviously I got fired from there. And then, but that motivated me to be able to do something else. You know, now I have my own thing going on. I'm a licensed contractor and I've been doing that. And, you know, but it's just weird how, like, they talk about it. It's like if one door closes, another bigger one opens. You know, a lot of pain is a great motivator. You know, and I'm really grateful that I have people in my life. I have guys like Oscar. I have my sponsor, You know, I have friends. You know, I have a host of friends. And I think one of the biggest things in my life that I try to live by is not to take myself so seriously. I really try to laugh at myself. All I can make now is lowercase L's, and I'm fine with it. You know what I mean? I was thinking. And, you know, and it's like, I still have a lot of work to do, man. I still have trouble with relationships. I still have trouble with consistency. You know, I'm learning a lot with being an adult still. And, I mean, I've been sober half my life, man, and this has been the most rewarding and amazing thing I've ever experienced in my life. You know, the most important, for sure. And I wouldn't trade it for anything, dude. You know, because I know what it's like to be young. Like, I was 16 years old, and I went to this meeting and took a cake, and I was blasted, dude. I was so high. And I go up, and my sponsor at the time, his name was Randy, and he gave me this tie to wear. Not this one, but a tie. And I'm wearing this torn up Iron Maiden shirt. You know, my jeans were all messed up, and I'm wearing shoes that were just, the toe was going through, and I was looking for jobs that day in that. And so he gave me this tie, and he's like, you're going to wear this tie every year for the rest of your life. And I'm like, whatever, man. So I go up, and I didn't appreciate this program. I took advantage of it. I'd get high in your bathrooms and in your meetings, you know. I would bring little airport bottles full of whiskey and just, you know, drink them in the meeting. Because I like to live dangerous, you know. But you guys always told me to keep coming back. And I think that was the most important thing that I ever learned in this program is, like, you know, unless I start throwing chairs at people and making it dangerous for people to be here, you're always going to be welcome back, you know. And I was always welcome back by you guys. And that's the attraction for me. That's the 12th step. And it's like, you know, for me, the 12th step is just hopefully I remain attractive enough for an uncomfortable person to come up to me and like, hey, man, I feel that way too. Because that's what you guys did for me, is when I would go to meetings and feel super uncomfortable and my instincts were just going crazy, you guys would come up to me and make me feel at home. You know, so if you get anything out of this tonight, especially for the newcomers, I just know that for me, there's another side to uncomfortability. The world's not ending. There's a solution. Things will get better. And all I got to do is just keep coming back. So thank you.